Hey everyone, welcome back to Timeout Talk. Today we're going to be talking about James Harden's debut with the Clippers, just generally how teams have been doing around the league and more. So let's jump right into it.
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Timeout Talk. We're your hosts, Raphael's here.
And Hunter Leon.
And there's a ton to cover. So we'll just start with James Harden debut with the Clippers. And let's just say it got off to a bit of a rocky start. The Clippers played the Knicks and they lost. And then I think they lost their subsequent game. I can't remember who it was against, but that game, oh, it was against the Nets. And that game was just full of lowlights. I'm sure you might have all seen that clip of James Harden trying to make a pass. He ends up throwing it to the announcer's table. Pretty funny clip. But that just kind of shows how this Clippers team is really struggling to fit James Harden into this offense and are still figuring out, how to incorporate him into their system. So, Hunter, what did you see from these two losses in terms of James Harden fit with this team? And how long do you think it'll take for them to adjust?
Okay, well, first, let's start by talking about efficiency. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, before James Harden got there, were like ridiculously red hot. Like, we're talking 60% from the field efficiency, like 55-60% from three. That's just not sustainable. They both had fairly low efficiency games. I believe in the Knicks game, Kawhi shot like 5 of 15 or something like that, and PG shot like 4 of 13. So, kind of regressing to the mean a little bit. So I obviously those are bad shooting splits for them, but considering how red hot they'd been, it was bound to happen at some point. So I think that kind of just amplified the fact that James Harden had just got there totally separate from that. So, I think they're going to return to their regular efficiency, which is going to help them in the next couple of games. I think people are definitely going to overreact to these first two games of James Harden, and it just looks a little sloppy. Maybe James is a little out of game shape. Like, I think we have to take this in context and look at the bigger picture, like what I was saying with Kawhi and PG. But also, I think the bigger question that we had already talked about was how do Russ and James Harden coexist on the floor? And so far, that question has been answered.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about that coexistence between the two?
Well, really, they want to give the ball to James. It looks like very clearly they've established that James Harden is the guy who with the ball. And we've seen Russell Westbrook can never play off ball. That's just never going to happen in his career. He cannot shoot. It's going to result in people lagging or, dragging into the paint. And it's going to close opportunities for other players. So, it's possible that some of those – I saw in some of those plays, it looked like because – defenders were able to sag off of Russ standing in the corner, they were able to put some extra attention on Kawhi, put some extra attention on Paul George, and that also made them shoot worse. So really, I think they're going to have very limited minutes of these two playing together, and probably just Russ leading the second unit. You're not tied up with money, you're not tied up with like this mentality thing, but I also think that Russell Westbrook has been very good for the Clippers, so I'm not trying to like hate on him or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that it's not just the inefficiency, it's also the turnovers, I want to say, which leads to easy transition buckets for, the opposing teams. You look at this Clippers team play right now, and they're sloppy, they're making careless passes, they're just, turning the ball over, just really, like, silly mistakes that they weren't making before, and that just slowed this offense down to a halt. They're not having that fluidity anymore. The offense looks really static. It's a lot of, ISO ball. And also James Harden, like individually, he does not look comfortable. If you watch him play right now, he's hesitating to shoot. He sometimes looks lost out there, which makes sense. He hasn't had time to really, get familiar with this system. But I was not a big proponent of this trade. I mean, I think that you're sacrificing depth for star power. And I think James Harden at this point in his career has proven to everyone that he's not a winning player, at least in the playoffs. Like, he consistently falters. So why the Clippers found it necessary to add yet another star-level talent to their team in exchange for some really critical depth, I don't really get. I think they're going to get better. I think this is still a playoff team. They're still going to look really good at certain points because you have Kawhi and PG on the same squad together. But I don't think this raises their ceiling significantly. I think that, you know, James Harden is going to do what James Harden does. He's going to have those games during the regular season where he just takes over. He's going to have the, you know, 20 and 15 games. He's going to have the high scoring 40 point nights. I'm sure of it. Like, that is definitely going to happen at some point this season. But come playoff time, he's going to let this team down, right? He's not the guy you want to trust with the ball in his hands in the playoffs. And I don't know if Kawhi and PG can really, like, overcome that, because at least Paul George has definitely had his fair share of struggles in the playoffs. Although I think he has sort of put those criticisms to bed with how he's played in the playoffs as of late. But
yeah,
for the most part, the end point is I don't think that this move was a good move in the long shot, but I think that they'll start to get better really soon as James Harden gets used to the system.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're both pretty much on the same page here. Clippers ultimately going to be a good team, but, you know, it's just going to take some time. I think we can move on, though, because we did talk about them in the last pod. And I did want to talk about the Knicks, because we did talk about, you know, that Clippers lost to the Knicks. But for the most part, the Knicks have been okay. You know, they've just been pretty okay. But what's not made them good, they could be good, but Julius Randle has been really dragging this team down. He's been averaging 16 points per game. He's really regressed. On here are this efficiency: 31, 26, and 66 shooting splits, which is the worst to start a career on his volume of efficiency of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
it's pretty bad. And I don't know if you also saw that clip. I forget who they were playing against, but there were like 10 seconds left on the clock. You know, Julius Randle is at half court, and he just proceeds to walk on defense and let the opposing team score, and then goes over to Jalen Brunson and complains about his lack of effort on defense.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that was against the Bucks in the in-season tournament. Right. Just really poor character. Like, you can obviously forgive like a rough start to the season, because this is in a classic Julius Randle fashion. He'll have one season he looks like the worst player in the league, and then the next season he'll come around to be the most improved player, you know, all-star level talent, all NBA kind of guy. And you're just like, why can't you do this every season? So it seems like we're in the trough of Julius Randle right now, which is a shame for Knicks fans, because on the other hand, RJ Barrett is having his best season yet as a pro. He's averaging 22 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, but he looks confident out there. You know, like, he's hitting big time shots. He's, you know, driving to the cup. He looks a lot more confident in his decision making, and he's obviously shooting the ball really well. He's shooting 47% from 3, which is not sustainable, right? Like, for the whole season, but still goes to show he's been putting in that work in the offseason, working on his shot, as that was really a big criticism of his game earlier. And Jalen Brunson, he's doing what Jalen Brunson does. You know, he's averaging a cool 22, 5, and 4, about a steal a game. You might want a little bit more out of him, but I think, yeah, really it's Julius Randle that's dragging this team down. You're not going to make it very far if, in theory, your second best player is playing like your worst player. And the thing that's keeping the Knicks afloat right now, I would say, is their defense. You know, they got the second best defense in the NBA, but the second to last offense. So Tom Thibodeau, he likes the physical teams. He likes to play defensively. And that's always going to keep them to be at least a solid team. But if they want to get back into the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference, which they certainly have all the pieces to do, I think it all falls on Julius Randle's shoulders.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's a mentality thing. It seems to be at this point, because I guess surprising for a guy who started his career playing with Kobe Bryant, it just seems to be a very weak mentality, because we know he has the physical ability. We know we've seen it in previous seasons. It seems like he just gets a little complacent. Which Definitely. Is a little sad to see.
Yeah. But
yeah, let's talk about a team who hasn't been complacent, who has been really surprising in a good way, and that's the Timberwolves. You know,
yeah,
we've talked about last year how this Cat and Rudy Gobert situation can't work, even if Anthony Edwards has an amazing season. But They've been 4-0 in their last four games. They're 5-2 right now, and they're winning their games by an average of 10.5 points, which is the third best in the NBA. So they're blowing teams out, led by Anthony Edwards, who's averaging 30 points, 5.5 boards, 5.5 assists, and 2 steals, which really, that's MJ numbers right there on 56% from the field. Like, obviously, we're talking about very small sample size, but like, those look like very much like Michael Jordan-esque stats for a season. And this is the best defensive team in the NBA, anchored by Rudy Gobert, who finally seems to be fitting into the identity of this Timberwolves team alongside Karl-Anthony Towns. And he individually has the best defensive rating in the league, which is, it's nice to see him back on top after a few years of him being hated on.
No, definitely. I want to say this much. Anthony Edwards is having the superstar level jump that we thought he was going to have last year. You know, he right now is playing like one of the best two-way guards in the entire NBA. And I emphasize the two-way aspect of that because he's been doing this on both ends of the floor. If you catch the end of the Celtics versus Timberwolves game, right? That's a close game. It goes to overtime, right? What does Anthony Edwards do, right? Isolation play versus Jason Tatum. He's locked in. He's defending him. And then he gets a bucket on the other end, right? Like he's doing it on both ends of the floor. It's very Kobe Bryant-esque, right? Where he wants to take on the assignment of guarding the opponent's best player. And then he's going to go out and get a bucket on the other end of the floor. And we know Anthony Edwards, he has all the physical attributes to do it. You know, super athletic player. But I mean, he's just so efficient. His shooting has somehow gotten better. And I just really want to emphasize the defensive aspect because when he came into the league, the biggest criticism of his game was that he doesn't really have the defensive motor. He has all the attributes to be there. He just doesn't have the mentality. He doesn't have the discipline or just the effort. And he really seems to be trying on that end now and really putting all the pieces together. So Anthony Edwards is low key, like a dark horse MVP candidate right now. If the Timberwolves manage to be like a top 4 seed in the West, he's gonna be in those conversations. I know it's early, but like as of right now, with the way he's playing, with the way the Timberwolves are playing, he has to be in those conversations. And then the last thing I'll say before I hand it off to you is just the Timberwolves are not just beating scrubs. They beat the Denver Nuggets, right? They handed the Nuggets their only loss this season. They obviously beat the Celtics, as I just mentioned. And as you said, they're beating all these teams by massive margins, right? They beat the Nuggets by 21 points. So the Timberwolves look legit. Rudy Gobert's really fit in this offense. And Naz Reid looks like one of the best 6 men in the whole league.
Rafa, did you have the Timberwolves as your 11 seed this year?
Oh, shit. Did I have them not even making the playoffs? Oh,
Yes, you did.
man.
I had them, I think, at the either the 9 or the 10. We can run it back later, but we both, as of now, are wrong.
Okay, but you can't blame us for being low on the Timberwolves because after how they looked last year, I mean, we both were big. Like last year, we were high on the Timberwolves.
I
We
was a little
said,
too high. I think I said the 3 seed and you said the 4 seed.
we were both just a little ahead of our time. You know,
Yeah,
we thought that this would
exactly.
all click, but it actually clicked the next season, which
Right.
makes, you know, you got to give us some credit there.
Yeah, but one thing I want to talk about with Anthony Edwards, in like this style of play, this old school way of getting to that 30 points per game. I really love it. It's the Kobe Bryant, the Michael Jordan way, which is I can be a 25 point per game scorer without trying on defense, but if I get myself those 2 steals a game, I can get 2, 3 easy transition buckets to get myself from a 25 point per game scorer who doesn't play defense to a guy who's always locked in, get myself to that 30 points per game, and I just look elite on both sides of the ball. And those are the guys that every team wants to have. They want a guy who's locked in on both ends, buys into defense, buys into transition basketball, is athletic, is young. Like he just checks all the boxes. And as a fellow University of Georgia soon to be alum, I have to root for him, you know?
Absolutely.
but also Rudy Gobert, finally happy to see him doing well. And the spacing has been working with him and Kat. I think it's been nice to see Kat take a back seat. He's, not too much in the spotlight, but he's averaging 18, I think like 18 and 8. So like, very much, I wouldn't say tertiary. I'd say like Anthony Edwards has clearly established himself as the, best player on the team. And Rudy Gobert and Kat are kind of taking the 2A, 2B role, which I like it that way, as opposed to having Rudy Gobert be the clear bottom guy.
But this team right now, like defensively, we've already established like how Anthony Edwards and Gobert have really been locking it down. But I also want to mention Jaden McDaniels, right? This is a guy
Yes.
who's like one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. And I also want to mention just on that aspect of spacing, Naz Reid, I know I brought him up, but he legitimately is like a sixth man of the year candidate right now. He's averaging about 14, 15 points a game, four boards, a steal, and about
Really good efficiency, like 55, 44,
yeah,
93.
he's lighting it up from three, you
He's
know,
50,
like
40, 90 right now.
yeah, so he's been playing incredibly well. So I think the Timberwolves are onto something this season. I don't, they're definitely not gonna, actually, I don't want to say definitely because last time I counted out the Timberwolves, they just played really well. So I don't know if this is sustainable. I mean, they got a bunch of guys, you know, shooting above like 50, 40% from three. Like Jaden McDaniels knocking it down at 47%. I don't know how sustainable that is. But still, I think the Timberwolves are looking really good. And if Anthony Edwards keeps up this style of play, they're going to be a team to definitely look out for in the playoff hunt.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think we can now move on to the next team we're going to talk about. And that,
I'm
okay.
sorry. I'll introduce this one for
Yes, you
you.
can introduce it.
Yeah, so the Sixers, who have obviously been in the news recently a lot with the James Harden trade, are really in full swing right now. They're 6-1, and they just had a very convincing victory against the Celtics. And actually, I'm going to walk that back. It wasn't very convincing because at the end, they sort of let them get back into the game, and it got really dicey. And I'm sure Sixers fans were sweating bullets, but they did beat the Celtics, and Embiid is playing like it. Like he's the reigning MVP right now. He's averaging 31, 11, and 6. He's dominating a lot of these games, just putting up monster stat lines. And a lot of the new guys they picked up, you know, Roko, Batum, they're finding some quality minutes into this rotation. And along with Tyrese Maxey, who is another guy making one of those all-star jumps, the Sixers look legit. So, Hunter, what are your thoughts on the Sixers? Do you think this is their season? And do you think they improved after trading James Harden?
Yeah, I think there's a clear level of, I guess, like peace for this team. This is a team that year after year, since 2019, we're talking about 4 years of stress. This team has been dealing with the headache of a star, you know, like I'm losing like the word, but like I guess a misguided star, just like a locker room cancer, whether it was Ben Simmons for 2 years, James Harden for 2 years, like that's gone. And they finally found like a lead guard in Tyrese Maxey, who's a very humble, very down to earth, like kind of puts his head down and wants to work kind of player. And it's worked so well with Joel Embiid because I think they both are that type of personality. They want to put their head down and work. And you can see it on the floor. And Tyrese Maxey has elevated himself and he's elevated his teammates. You know, we knew he could do it to himself, but to see him be a floor general, averaging seven assists per game, with not even a turnover, like that's incredible. Like he's just putting up, or like, sorry, 1.4 turnovers, but he's looked great. And his three hasn't been falling at the probably the clip he wants to be falling at in the past few games, but just overall, he's been incredible. Averaging what 25 and 5, 25, 7 and 5 on the season. And then, you know, I have to mention Joel Embiid. He's been dominant, you know, 32 points, 11 boards, and the six assists is what I like to see. This is a team that is sharing the ball, and you can see it. They don't need James Harden to do it. So they've been playing really well. Also, shout out to a guy who I did not think still had a place in the NBA, and that is Kelly Oubre. He
Yeah, I was
has
about to say.
Yeah, he's been averaging 17 points for this team. He's like a very clear sharpshooter. He's, you know, averaging 40% from three. And you know, he's just looked pretty solid, which, you know, good for him. He's
Yeah,
his
seriously.
true shooting's at 63%, you know.
This is a
That's
guy
solid.
who like, you know, nobody wanted in the offseason, and the Sixers just kind of picked him off the street pretty much. He looked like a guy who might have been bound for Europe or something like that. But he's been really finding his role on this Sixers team and really contributing a lot to this offense here. And then, you know, like there's just a lot of quality players here. I think Nicholas Batum is a guy who's fit right in. Robert Covington has found a couple minutes here and there.
Tobias Harris.
I want to mention Patrick Beverley because he's another guy with like one of the best defensive ratings, and I think that he's contributed a lot to just this team winning games. Say what you want about Pat Bev, he has a lot of off the court antics, but he knows how to win games. You know, like he knows how to contribute to that. Also, I want to say like Tyrese Maxey, his jump is not only in the offense, because we always knew like he's such a talented offensive player. Even his rookie campaign, he was, you know, had so many flashes of offensive brilliance. It's the playmaking, it's the maturity and the poise with the ball that's really impressed me. You know, like he has really taken so many strides as a playmaker, especially now that James Harden's gone. That ability will continue to flourish for him. And so I think that this trade was honestly a pretty good move. I think that, as you said, like just getting rid of him, it's regardless of the package, just having that clarity, that tranquility, and not having to deal with all the drama is so good for Philadelphia.
And this man is going to be getting himself a bag next season. He's getting the max.
Absolutely.
He bet on himself and he won.
Yeah, and I think rightly so. And the last thing I want to mention about the Sixers is just the coaching aspect, right? I think that Nick Nurse really knows how to utilize Joel Embiid in a way that Doc Rivers never could. And I think that Nick Nurse, like, we consider him one of the best coaches in the NBA, and I think he's proving it again, right? Completely new squad than what he had in Toronto, and he just knows how to utilize his guys. So I think the future is bright for Philadelphia fans. I think that the concern has always come playoff time. Like, you know, is Embiid going to be healthy? How is the squad going to look? But as of right now, the Sixers are in really good shape.
Yeah. Oh, I think we're in the same spot. So we can move on to talking about the Pacers.
Sure.
This is another team that I really like. Another team who's led by an amazing point guard and Tyrese Maxey, who's averaging 23-12 with 2 turnovers a game.
They're not led by Tyrese Maxey.
Oh my God, Tyrese Halliburton.
Another Tyrese.
another Tyrese. But this is a team that's been the number one offense in the NBA. This is a team that's sharing the ball. They are averaging the most assists in the NBA, over 30 a game, which is pretty insane. And they're 6-3 after a monster win tonight against a Damian Lillard-less Bucks. But Giannis did score 54. And when Giannis scores 54, you think the Bucks are going to win, but they didn't. You know, the Pacers were able to hold them off a little bit, and just a good team win. So this is another team that's been beating good teams. And I really like what I see out of them. I mean, we've talked about this many times, but Tyrese Halliburton is the new Chris Paul. It's just 100%. And easily. Miles Turner has also been great. He's averaging 18, 8, and 2 blocks a game, which we knew we've seen this from him in the past, but he's just proving himself as a secondary guy. You know, after Sabonis left, he talked about how I want to be an all-star. And, you know, he's not that, but he's been really good for this team. And, you know, you talk about coaching. I think Rick Carlisle has been a very positive influence on this offense, especially. Mm-hmm. You know, their defense isn't there, but that'll come around. You know, I'm not too worried about this team. The one thing I will say is this is a team that has been winning on very thin margins game to game. I think they're like winning by like 4 or 5 points on average. They're having a lot of close calls, so that could come to bite them later in the season. But, you know, I think this is still a very young team, and they have a lot of solid pieces surrounding this young core, like Miles Turner, like Buddy Hield. So I think this team's very promising, and I like where I had them in my my pick. I think I had them number 6. I think I had them sneaking into the, not even the play-in, just the regular playoffs.
Yeah,
so
I had them.
What do you think of this Pacers team?
Number 7. I think that this Pacers team, unlike their hideous city jerseys, like it's actually atrocious to see.
Probably
on the court.
Maybe the worst.
Yeah, it's definitely
close.
Up there.
It's close.
It is 100% up there. But unlike their city jerseys, the Pacers look great. I think they're doing a lot by committee. You know, they got guys like Benedict Mathurin, right? Like Jalen Smith off the bench. Obi Toppin, who's looked good as a starter too. Lot of these guys, Bruce Brown is fit into this team, just kind of one of those utility players doing a little bit of everything, but all led by Tyrese Halliburton, who I mean, another like he's gonna have another all-star campaign this year. Averaging 12 assists, only like three turnovers too. I think that to call him the new Chris Paul is accurate. I don't think he's reaching those heights yet because Chris Paul, like, he would have some ludicrous seasons
Yeah.
where it's like, 11 assists to one turnover, and you're like, how is this even possible? But he's the closest thing we have with this new generation of players, and he's a guy that's like just the leader of this team through and through. Just this game against the Bucks, I think tonight, right? He had that big three to put them up down the stretch.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who's like also he can shoot the three ball too. He's shooting at about 70 or not 70, 37% from beyond the arc.
Hey, leave that to the year 2040 when we can tell our kids, back in my day, they used to shoot 37% from three. These kids nowadays shooting 70% from three. It's ridiculous.
Why are we old men at 2040? Damn, we're gonna be like 40 years old. Didn't know we were gonna be grandpas.
Hey, all I'm saying is that's how we're gonna sound to the kids. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, we're gonna be the old heads. That's fair. But yeah, I really like this Pacers team. I knew like coming into the season, like all the pieces were there. They have a plethora of young talents and a lot of like really proven. More, I don't even want to call them vets, but like, Miles Turner's been around for a few seasons at this point, and he really is the anchor of this defense. Buddy Hield, one of the best sharpshooters in the league. And then you got, guys like Obi Toppin and Bruce Brown, guys from other teams that they're bringing in to sort of solidify this offense. And then I think, yeah, good to mention Rick Carlisle, because if there's anything that he knows how to do, it's run an offense. And boy, is this offense firing on all cylinders right now. And so, I like the Pacers. I think they are looking really good, and I'm excited to continue to see how they grow and blossom.
Yeah,
So
I'm excited for this team.
I think with that, we can move on to talking about some rookies and give a little update on how they've been performing so far in the league, because I don't think we really did that too much last time. So let's start with, the number one overall pick, the headline of every story right now, Victor Wembanyama. Who's averaging about 19, 8, and 3 blocks. He is already really impressing. He had that, I would call it almost like a breakout game versus the Suns, where he had 39, 38 points,
Ten
and
boards. Yep.
10 boards, just, hitting some ridiculous shots, pull-up threes, mid-range, just doing it all, blocks, everything you would want to see from him against Kevin Durant, like very poetic that he's doing it against the guy that he was really compared to a lot. In terms of archetype, in terms of play style, as well as like the Spurs as a whole are playing really well. So, what have you seen from Victor Wembanyama, and are you like buying into the hype more now that you've seen him play several games?
Yeah, I think now than ever in the NBA, it's easier to have big breakout games, just because the style of play, the pacing, the kind of just the way the NBA is structured. But that I'm not trying to take away from him at all. I think I have bought into this, and I bought into it because he even exceeded anything that I could have thought was possible. Even LeBron in his rookie year, he didn't have these a 40-point game right away, right? Like, it took him a little bit of time to get adjusted, and I'm not comparing him to LeBron or anything, but like LeBron is the model template of best like rookie season, for anyone to follow, and Wemby's on that trajectory. Like, he's been consistent with kind of like the statistics that LeBron put up in his rookie season, and when you're looking at how much he's been impacting the winning for the Spurs team, I mean, the Spurs were the worst team in the NBA last year, and this year, along with a lot of other pieces that make them good, but Wembanyama has led this team to be a promising team that could win a lot of games, not in the future, but this season. This is a team that realistically I could see winning, 40 games this season, and that's crazy to say for, that puts them in the play-in. That puts them right around the play-in. So, Devin Vassell has been amazing. Jeremy Sochan has been amazing. This is just a team that has a ton of young talent. I really like Zach Collins as well. I think he's been a really nice fit alongside Wembanyama, kind of like a skinny tower duo. Like, I was worried that not having a bigger, burly center to be able to deal with like the Jokic, Nurkic, like Embiid types was going to hurt them. But it hasn't so far, and it could be because they just haven't played those types of guys yet.
Yeah.
But what are you seeing out of the Spurs team?
I mean, I like the Spurs team as a whole. They got a lot of guys I like. I think Devin Vassell is a guy who, is a really dynamic scorer, can light it up from beyond the arc, and just has a lot of aspects to his game, just standout shooter. I liked him last year, and I think that he's taken a big step in his game. I think that Wemby opens up so much for the offense, when offenses or defenses really have to like factor in everything with this guy, right? He can shoot the three, he can shoot the mid-range, he can dominate down low. Like, it's a big problem for offenses to deal with. So that opens things up for guys like Trey Jones, Keldon Johnson, Doug McDermott, right? I think Jeremy Sochan is such an interesting player. There's not many guys like him, right? Where he can kind of do a bit of everything. He almost has that Draymond kind of archetype where what he gives you on offense is not shooting, right? It's everything else. He's a playmaker, he's a defender, he's a guy who's gonna fight for boards. But he's not really gonna give you the shooting or really the scoring even. But I think this team is still very young, and you see them make a lot of mistakes, and I think that there's a lot of room for growth here. I don't know if I'm bought into them yet being a play-in team. I think Victor Wembanyama is also taking a lot of he's experiencing some growing pains right now. I think that game
For
against the
sure.
Knicks was very telling, where he got held to just 14 points, pretty inefficient. I think he was pretty much he didn't make a field goal in the first half because Mitchell Robinson really had his number. And so, Wembanyama, for as great as he's looked, he's still just a rookie. He's 19 years old. We have to give him some time to really develop and come into his own. I think that he's going to have some great flashes here and there, but I think next year is really the year where like the Spurs are going to break out and be the team to look out for. But I
I
think
agree.
Wembanyama has been really like he's put a lot of my doubts to rest. I'll say
For
that
a guy
much.
who does not have an NBA body, I'm thoroughly impressed.
Yeah.
This is
No,
a guy
absolutely.
very skinny, very young. He's going to grow into his body. And if we see that sort of Giannis type transformation, which I don't know if he physically has the capability to do that metabolism wise, like it's over. Like if he has that sort of transformation, it would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think we can move on to Chet Holmgren, the previous second overall pick who didn't play any games last year. He's looked pretty amazing along this, just talent-filled OKC team. He's averaging 17 points, 8 boards, and 2.5 blocks. So pretty similar numbers to Wembanyama. And, these were the guys who were probably the two front runners for this race, and they're neck and neck right now. So what are you seeing out of Chet?
Yeah, I mean, Chet looks great, right? I think that what he really provides for this Oklahoma City team is shot blocking and defense, right? I think that what this team really lacked was a guy to hold it down low. And he's been providing that and more. Obviously, like on offense too, he's giving you that unicorn-esque production, right? He's lighting it up from three, he's dunking it down low. He's just a threat to deal with. He's great in the pick and roll with Shea as well. That's one thing I really like to see. But yeah, I think he's fit right in like a glove, which is awesome to see. And he's really lived up to that second overall pick status. I think that for OKC in general, the discourse online around OKC kind of fluctuated. At first, people were really high on them, but the hype got so far out of control that people eventually started going back down on them,
Yeah.
saying, they're overrated. They're not going to be that good. Shea is overrated. But I think that, Oklahoma City, especially Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, was rightly hyped up because he's the real deal. I think that it's very arguable that he's a top 15, if not top 10 player in the NBA right now. I mean, he is an all NBA kind of guy. I mean, he was all NBA last year, and he is really powering this OKC offense. And I think that him and Chet together, as they continue to grow and develop, is going to be like such a scary sight. And then you have like guys like Jalen Williams, Lu Dort, who I think is a really, really great like two-way kind of guy. And just so many other of the young pieces on this team. I really like what's going on in OKC. I also think that like kind of similar to the Spurs, I think they are a little bit more accelerated in their timeline. Like I think that they're going to be a play-in team this season, but like I think that playoffs is a little bit out of reach for them, maybe. Like at least
I don't
like
know. I
top six.
don't know. This is a team that's 5-3 right now. They played some solid teams. I think this is a team that could very well be on the top side of the play-in, you know, or like even a sixth seed, you know. I think it's very possible. But going back to Chet, I want to talk about the fact that although it's unsustainable, his shooting splits are ridiculous. He's averaging 55% from three, I think 57% from the field, and like 90% from the free throw line. Just insane efficiency. He's been a really good 3-point shooter from them from the corner and from, you know, the top of the key. And he's just been fitting in beautifully. So I really like what I'm seeing from him.
Yeah. I also want to mention one more thing. Speaking of another rookie, Cason Wallace, who's been starting for them at point guard, he has looked really good. He's been incredibly efficient. I think that for a while he was shooting 50, 40, 90, which, you know, for a rookie, especially a rookie guard, is pretty unheard of. So I think that he's really gelled with this team. He's found his role, and he's looked great. I think there's a lot of great playmaking on this team between him and Josh Giddey, obviously. So I like OKC. I like OKC. I don't love him though.
Yeah, it's interesting though. I just talked about Josh Giddey too, because while we're on the topic, he's taken a little bit of a back seat this season, which is interesting to see for a guy so young. You know, this is a team with a lot of talent, a lot of depth, and he's definitely kind of the guy who's just let things come to him, which I love to see from such a young team. To see that kind of maturity out of a young player is very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to realize there's only one ball, right? Like, not everyone can, you know, have it at all times. And so for him to be like, I'm gonna take a back seat and just sort of like make the plays when they come to me, especially when a guy like Cason Wallace is playing really well and Shea is obviously gonna have the ball most of the time. Like that shows like a lot of maturity, a lot of just, yeah, a lot of maturity is what I'll say about that.
Yeah, I think we can move on to talking about Ausar Thompson. He's been playing great for the Pistons, just probably the best, most well-rounded player in this draft as far as what he can do on the floor. Averaging 12 points a game, 10 boards. He's averaging the most boards of any rookie. Four assists, two blocks, and a steal. So what are you seeing out of Ausar and this Pistons team?
Dude, I really like the Pistons. They're
Yeah.
fun to watch. Like, I don't know, like, you know, between Ausar, who is really came in just doing it all, right? Like, he's scoring, he's blocking guys, he's getting boards, he's getting steals, he's hustling. Like, he's just such a hooper, man. Like, I'll just say that much about Ausar Thompson. But then you got guy, obviously, Cade is still there. Like, he's having a great season, averaging about 24 and 7. Jaden Ivey is like looking really good, definitely taking a step up in his game. Jalen Duren, right? Like Jalen Duren's having a breakout season, averaging 14 and 12. Beef Stew is still there, you know, Isaiah Stewart. And just in general. And also, I want to shout out Marcus Sasser. You know, that's another one of the rookies this year. He's been very, very solid. And he's had some big games for them. But in general, like the Pistons are fun to watch. Like they're having some crazy plays. Like, you know, you'll see some highlights on Bleach Report of the Detroit Pistons, and you're like, what year is this? Is this 2004? Like, what's going on? So I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Detroit and specifically from Ausar Thompson. And yeah, man, it's been good to watch. It's been fun.
Yeah. This isn't a team that's winning games by any means, but they have a very promising future. And I think we can confidently say about pretty much every team in the NBA at this point, except for the Charlotte Hornets, every team has like of these young cores, like just such a bright future. Like there's just so much talent in the NBA, and the Charlotte Hornets managed to miss out on it every single year.
Well, speaking
But
of the Charlotte Hornets,
yeah.
let's talk about Brandon Miller, right? He was averaging about 13, 4, and 2. And let's compare him to Scoot Henderson, who's going to be out for a while, but we did see a little bit of him. I mean, so far, it seems like the Charlotte Hornets really hit the nail on the head taking Brandon Miller over Scoot Henderson, as he has struggled quite a bit to start the season.
If you're talking about like just like early season, what we've seen, Brandon Miller has definitely been the better player. We talked about how people might overreact to this whole Scoot thing, and when you're running an entire offense, it takes much more to kind of learn when you're just given the keys of a franchise as opposed to just fitting into a role in a system. But Brandon Miller's been pretty solid. Like he's definitely not the best in this draft class, and I think we knew that when he was drafted. But this is a guy who I think is going to be more solid in the NBA than people thought. You know, he's averaging 13, 4, and 2, and he's doing his job. And I'm not going to lie to you, I don't watch the Hornets. I have no interest in watching the Hornets. But, you know, every once in a while, I see some clips of him, and I'm like, that just looks like a solid play. And I think this guy has the right, he's an NBA body. He definitely has, like, it seems the mentality. He's like a competitive spirit, and he seems to be the most level-headed guy that the Hornets have drafted in a long time, outside of the LaMelo Ball, because you know he's been pretty good for them as well. And I mean, I kind of feel a little bad for LaMelo. Just got drafted to the wrong team, because put him in a different jersey, like I don't know, put him in like a Knicks jersey, and he's gonna be like going wild, selling all these jerseys, just like you know, balling out. You gotta have you had to put him in North Carolina. Tough.
Tough, definitely tough. But I think that, you know, you look at what's going on in Charlotte and it's just a disaster, right? Like, yes, you took Brandon Miller, which seemed to be the right move, but you had that whole fiasco with Miles Bridges,
And
Ty Jones.
Kai
I mean,
Jones
just,
is pretty bad.
yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in Charlotte where just, it's just from a managerial standpoint, like, I wouldn't want to have to deal with that. And, you know, just like, you look at this team and nobody here is really that inspiring. Like, you know, like LaMelo is obviously, you know, the best player on this team and in the brightest spot. And Mark Williams, I think, is solid too. But you got an old Gordon Hayward there who is just basically taking up space. JT Thor is there. Theo Maledon, like, is this really like inspiring for your future? No. So,
Yeah, and PJ Washington is probably the second best player on this team, and he's like 25 now. He's not a part of the young core anymore.
yeah, and there was obviously that like whole deal in like the offseason where they wouldn't want to extend him, and so like you have to wonder like what is the management doing in Charlotte? Charlotte stays the biggest, like the biggest, I don't want to swear, but like you know the biggest mess of an organization in the league. So honestly, good for them that they hit like kind of a home run with Brandon Miller. It's not even a home run. That's kind of like,
No.
you know, it's hitting like a single or hitting a double, right? Like you got the second base, but you're not all the way there yet.
We're at the same point, but I think that's a good rookie update. If you had to like give me a ranking of right now, like these four guys, what's the ranking?
Think I'm going to say Wemby one, right? Say Chet two, Sar three. I mean, like, I'm just kind of going in order. Like, I think Wemby for sure one. I think Chet, yeah, two, just for like contributing to a winning team. Sar, he's looked so good, but Pistons aren't really doing anything. So three. And then I don't even know if I'd go Brandon Miller four. I guess. Yeah, I'll go Brandon Miller four. I'll give the Hornets something. You know, you got fourth in my rookie ranking, so congratulations, Hornets.
Yeah, I'll probably
But
have to go the same. I might
yeah.
flip Chet and Wemby. It's like pretty insane.
Yeah.
But that's gonna come back down to earth. So
Definitely.
I
And
think
all right,
that's
moving on to our last topic here. Let's talk about the Warriors, right?
good.
Dubs have looked really good to start the season, much better than me, you or I predicted. And I think that's a large part due to Stephen Curry, right? This is a guy who's 35 years old and arguably having one of his best seasons, right? Like, how many times do we have to say that? Where it's like Steph Curry is X years old and he might be having his best season. Like, it just, he keeps outdoing himself. He's insanely efficient, right? 30 points per game on 50, 48, and 92 shooting splits. Just ridiculous from Steph Curry. And just hitting so many big time shots, like every other, you literally open your phone, basically every single day there'll be a new Steph Curry highlight, right? He's just dominating the season out the gate. And we have to ask the question, is Steph Curry in contention for the best 35-year-old basketball player ever? Like, that is a genuine question we have to ask. Because keep in mind, at the beginning of last year, or at the beginning of this year, right? He was still 35, right? Like, he was 35 when he dropped 50 against the Kings in that game seven. So that's adding to his 35-year-old resume. So I guess, like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think we can narrow the top three down to LeBron, MJ, and Steph. That's a very exclusive club. You know, if you look at other guys in their careers, actually, maybe you could put Kareem there as well. I think Kareem was still dominating at that level at the age of 35 because he ended his career at 40, so he was still winning chips with the Lakers. But even then, Kareem wasn't the primary, you know, he wasn't the number one option on the team. That was Magic's team. So I think I can narrow it down to Steph, LeBron, and MJ, which is an incredible list to be a part of. I think at 35, that was either LeBron's last season. I think that was either 2018 or 2019. What is that for LeBron? Is that 3 years ago?
Think so.
If we're talking 3 years ago, that's probably LeBron's second season as a Laker. Okay, that's the bubble season, right? Are we
Yeah.
talking the bubble season?
Think
Okay, if we're
so.
talking the bubble season, I think LeBron is still there. Like, but Steph, if he has a, he could very well be tied with LeBron. And MJ, you know, won his, what, sixth ring at 35?
I think so.
Yeah.
I can
Okay.
double check that.
I think I'm right on that. But if that's the case, you know, MJ and LeBron both winning a ring at that age, I think
Yeah.
Steph Curry would also, to be there with those guys, has to win a chip at this age, which is a ridiculous ask.
Right.
But that's like Steph Curry, you know, you have to win your fifth chip to be in contention. But regardless of that, he's clearly the most efficient 35-year-old. I mean, he's shooting 12 and a half threes a game, and he's making half of them. Like,
That's
that's
insane, dude.
stupid.
That's so crazy.
The thing with Steph Curry, and that's unique to him, and no other player will ever have this, is he's so talented at shooting the basketball that even these in-game shots, every single rep he takes just makes him a better shooter. So as he goes on in his career, he might just permanently become a more efficient shooter. He just might scale like it's a
That's
fucking video
insane.
game. Like he just
Yeah.
might like his brain is just wired differently to like have that physical muscle memory to be able to know exactly what he's doing. And that's not something you could say for Damian Lillard. That's not something you could say for, you know, any of these shooters in the NBA. Steph just does it differently.
Steph
It's just
genuinely, like, he's one of the most talented athletes of all time. I think, like, you watch this guy in golf too, like the hand-eye coordination he has, like he's like ridiculously talented at golf too. So any sport this guy would have picked up that requires hand-eye coordination, he would be like in the top 0.001% of all athletes, you know?
And his
So
assists are down this year. Steph's assists, but that's makes sense. Chris Paul's there, and
yeah.
him and Draymond and Chris are all sharing the ball. But
Yeah.
you know, he's making great looks. Chris Paul's been finding him and getting him open threes. Like,
One thing I like that Chris Paul has done is Steph, he'll have this tendency when he's hot, he'll pass the ball. You know, like I don't know if it's because he's a selfless player or because he just, you know, doesn't want the pressure of like being the guy to do it all, maybe. I don't think it's that the latter. But if Steph's hot, Chris Paul's gonna find him with the ball. Steph will pass it, Chris Paul will pass it right back to him and make sure he's taking that shot when he's hot. So I like how Chris Paul like knows his personnel. He knows how to get the most out of his guys and just such a veteran savvy player.
Which honestly,
Are
good
you?
for Chris Paul. Good for
Yeah,
Chris
good
Paul,
for
because like
him,
I'm
seriously.
very happy for Chris Paul. Like it just puts a smile on my face, because after all this hate, like questioning from myself, from you, like literally everyone was questioning this fit, and we're like, there's no way this is gonna work. And to see it work immediately, and to see like the Damian Lillard situation not work out immediately. It's just like exactly the opposite of what we thought would happen. And that's why I love the NBA. You never know how these things are going to click. And this is the one that worked beautifully. And I think why that is because, like you said, Chris Paul anchors Steph Curry. Like they just have that mental connection, and he syncs up in that Draymond Green Steph Curry connection perfectly, because he's just such a smart player. Like he didn't need that time. He could just do it right away.
Yeah.
And
Whether I'm still bought into the Warriors is still up
yeah.
for debate.
Hey, I mean, they lost to the Nuggets on a Klay Thompson slipped out of the hand. I don't know what to call it, but I mean,
The
hey,
funniest clip I've ever seen.
they weren't gonna win that game, but Steph blew a layup all as
I
well in
saw
that
that,
game. So
yeah.
I mean, they had an opportunity to beat the Nuggets, and I was talking with my brother, who's a Warriors fan, as most of you know who are listening. But you know, I was like, Brandon, how can the Nuggets or how are the Warriors possibly going to defend Jokic? So it's just unreasonable, especially because Draymond Green isn't even playing. Who do you possibly have that could stop him? And they only lost by 3 points
Yeah.
without Draymond, which is impressive.
I mean, Jokic did dominate that game. Like, when the question of who's gonna guard Jokic was still unanswered. But the thing is, like, Warriors have such a high-powered offense, and we're able to neutralize a lot of the other guys. And plus, like, Jamal Murray, we all know
He
what
wasn't
happened to
playing.
him. Yeah. So, and also, yeah, it sucks for Jamal Murray. He's out for the rest of the month, I believe. So, very unfortunate for the Nuggets, but they seem to be doing just fine. That's the thing, like Jokic. The last thing I'll mention is Jokic still looks like the best player in the world. Like, I'm sorry, like, yes, we talk about Giannis, yes, we talk about all these other guys, Steph, Luka. Jokic is just out here dropping 30, 15, and 10
And
on
not caring.
60% shooting. And no, like, what? Who can stop this guy? Like, it's genuinely such a mystery.
I have a funny story for you before we get off.
Sure.
You met my friend Nikolai when we were here
Yeah.
in Athens. So Nikolai from Serbia. And Serbia is a very small, tight-knit community, regardless of where you live. Just like it's a very nationalistic thing. So Nikolai's uncle is a horse, like he does horse, like referee, not like refereeing, but like
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
he rates the horses, like, and you know how obsessed Jokic is with horses. So he was a judge of Jokic's horse, and Jokic like got really pissed off at him for like ranking his horse badly back in Serbia, and like had a full on like temper tantrum. Like Jokic had like a meltdown over this thing, and like it was like the media apparently totally like wrapped it up because they didn't want anyone to know like that Jokic had this meltdown, and they blamed it on his brother. So that was pretty funny,
Dude,
but
that's hilarious. I think
yeah,
that, like, I
Jokic
think
cares
that
more about his horses than the NBA championship.
literally, it's kind of insane that the best player in basketball doesn't care about basketball.
Not at all. He
And
probably barely touched a basketball in the off season.
I think he was saying that, like, he barely, like, he said he's, like, shot, like, a couple, like, times, but that's about it.
That's stupid.
I think that's a good place to call it, though.
Yeah.
Thank you again. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of Time Out Talk. We'll be back next week to cover everything new in the NBA. So, with that, appreciate y'all and catch you then. Take care.
Peace.